You're listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz on 1590 WPSL. You're probably wondering what's going on with the yen, what's going on with Korea, what's going on in Asia. You can read about it in the papers, but it's always, in my opinion, much better for you to find out about it firsthand, which is why we have James Corbett of the Corbett Report with us now, reporting from Japan. James, welcome back to the Financial Survival Network.
Well, once again, thank you for having me here, Curry. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
Yeah, we've missed you for a while, but now we're catching up. So what's going on there with Korea? Is this guy insane? Is he really going to attack the U.S. and by implication the rest of the world? Or is this just an attention-getting device?
Well, if I were a betting man, my money would certainly be on the latter. I don't see this as being a serious threat to the U.S. I don't think they even could seriously attack the U.S., even if they wanted to. But I put this just in line of the context of the series of events over the past 11 years or so that North Korea has constantly been using these types of provocations to try to get attention, to try to get some of the members of the group of six that have been negotiating with them to the table, trying to get some more goodies and handouts. And it's worked time and time again over the past several years. But maybe they've put their hand in the cookie jar one too many times, and now they have to keep upping the ante and making it even more outrageous in order to get that same attention. And I think there comes a point at which people stop taking them seriously at all, and I think we might be reaching that point. I personally am not exactly holding my breath waiting for some sort of Korean attack anyway.
You know, we've got a lot of surplus government cheese here in the U.S., like that Kraft Velveeta stuff that has zero nutritional content. Yeah. You think if we sent them a few boatloads of it, he'd just chill out for a while?
Well, I don't know. How about some horse meat from a Swedish furniture store or something like that?
Yeah, well, I'm sure that could be arranged. You know, those meatballs do taste a little funny, and now that the jig is up, I guess they've got a lot of surplus horse meat too that would find a willing and ready market in the in that Stalinist theme park of North Korea there.
Well, so. Exactly. And that's not to downplay what's happening there, because it truly is nightmarish, the types of things that the North Korean population suffers through because of the madness of their so-called leaders. So I don't want to downplay that situation. It is a terrible situation, and something does need to be done about it. But obviously negotiating with someone like Kim Jong-un is not going to result in happiness for anyone, I think. I think that just maintains his grip over the country, and that's not what we want to do. And of course, even then, it's not necessarily Kim Jong-un who's controlling the country. It's the military junta that's behind him. So I think we have to be realistic about what's happening there, and it is a deplorable situation. But at any rate, I mean, one thing that might be changing in all of this is the calculus that China is making, because China really is the economic lifeline for North Korea, and they are propping up that regime. And if they remove their support, that regime would crumble probably overnight. So China has been backing off lately in supporting North Korea, and they're still obviously going to be nominally supporting them, but they are at least allowing more Security Council resolutions and things like that to go through, because even they are getting a bit exasperated. So if your number one ally and your number one pal is starting to get exasperated with you, it's probably a sign you've crossed that line too many times.
Yeah, I mean, it's absurd. And, you know, it's amazing, James, when you look at the map, there's a satellite shot. I know you've seen it, and it shows the world at night. And you look at places like the U.S., Japan, even parts of China now, all of Western Europe, they're lit up like Christmas trees. And then you look at that little segment there of North Korea, and it's pitch black. It's got like two little Christmas lights on it. And then you look down south of the border to South Korea, and it's brilliant, lit up. And that kind of says it all, doesn't it?
They celebrate Earth Hour every day in North Korea.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, it's a bit absurd, but onto more serious things. It looks like the yen is in serious trouble. Japan's in serious trouble, not even considering the aftermath that's still taking place of the tsunami and the shattered remnants of the nuclear power plants. But you got this new regime in, and they just believe in, if you could have quantitative easing past infinity at light speed or warp speed, that's what they seem intent on doing.
That's what they seem intent on doing. That's what they're telegraphing. And it has worked definitely to drive down the yen, and which is, again, what they're trying to do. They're trying to get the yen inflated away to nothing so that they can reduce the value of their exports. Or supposedly that's what this Abenomics that they're touting these days is about. But I think there's a lot more going on here. Just another sign of the deep change that's happening in the electoral politics side of things here is that the newly appointed Bank of Japan governor, Haruhiko Kuroda, just came out today, actually, to say that that Japan's national debt is now officially abnormal, and he warned that that Tokyo must avoid a plunge in confidence among bondholders. And this is, I mean, pretty bland stuff, but for a Bank of Japan governor, that's pretty bold statements. So I think that it's getting to the point where they want to stress to the public just how dire the situation is without obviously causing the panic. But I think it's important to look at what's really behind this entire strategy, the fact that Japan is now jumping wholeheartedly 2 feet in completely into the deep end of the quantitative easing era. And I think we have to locate this, in fact, in the summer of last year, when the idea of Japan defaulting on its bonds was started to be floated by none other than an associate in Tokyo of George Soros. So you see Soros starting to pop up as a potential specter behind the whole idea of Abenomics, and that should be worrying for anyone who knows how Soros has manipulated currencies and profited off the plunging of the pound and other currencies in the past. So I think there's a lot of speculation that's going on behind the scenes in regards to what's happening with the yen right now. And even as an economic policy, I think it's doomed for failure because a lot of the Japanese economy is, in fact, based on internal consumption, and there's no real indication that dropping the yen is going to be that much of a boon to the exporters that it's actually going to really make a fundamental change in the Japanese economy, which, as we know, has been stagnating for two decades. So I think this is probably a failed policy in every way, but it's going to take, years of painful experimentation to find that out. And I guess we're all going to be along for the ride for it here in Japan. So I have the front seat to this theater that's being acted out right now, and I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah, it seems like Soros is the Typhoid Mary of fiat currencies. And you have to go back, James, and look and say, if we had a sound monetary system where every currency unit was backed up by some measure of precious metals, whether it's a combination of gold and silver, whatever, platinum, throw some copper in there too, I don't care. People like Soros couldn't pull the stuff that they pull.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, this is all based on the type of funny money transactions that take place through the central banks, which, as we all know, or we should all know by now, of course, is just debt-based paper fantasy land stuff that they create as they like in order to try to manipulate the economy how they like. And I don't know about you, but I haven't had any faith in that system since the moment I learned about it. But if recent events in Europe and elsewhere are any indications, I mean, the idea of handing off the control, the reins of the economy to these central banksters who clearly do not have the interests of the general public in mind, if that doesn't strike anyone as a bad idea yet, I'm thinking in the very near future, they're going to be coming around to that point of view.
Yeah, no doubt. And you know, I learned about it. I didn't know I was learning about it. And in fact, my brother didn't even know he was teaching me about unbacked currencies. But I'll never forget this day. It's as clear as, I don't know, the birth of my first child, every single aspect of the memory. My brother comes into the kitchen, and at that point, we had a linoleum floor. If you remember linoleum, before we were so sophisticated and had ceramic tile and granite and marble and natural stone floors. This was the 60s, after all, 1965. And he comes into the kitchen and he's got four or five 1965 quarters, or as my friend David Morgan calls them, Johnson slugs. And he drops them to the floor from about 3 or 4 feet up, and they tingle and they sound, you know, like cheap. Then he takes three or four pre-65 quarters that are 90% silver, and he drops them, and those things sounded substantial. And you know how when certain sensory impressions occur outside your sight, they can be much more powerful, like the sense of smell triggers memories from when you were a child, things like that. Well, when I hear silver drop on the floor, that memory comes back to me. And in effect, he didn't know it, but he was illustrating perfectly the difference between money and tokens that actually have no value whatsoever.
Well, I want to live wherever you're living that you hear the sound of silver dropping on the floor so much, but absolutely,
it is in my mind. Well, I carry three silver eagles in my pocket. I've just gotten into a habit because I like to quiz people and see if anybody really knows what the price of metals are. And of course, 98% of the people don't, and they have not a clue. They say, oh, it's worth a dollar. It says it's worth a dollar on it. And every now and then I do drop them, and it brings back those memories. But, you know, that leads us to precious metals prices. They've been in this sideways trough for 18 months, 19 months. They're basically going nowhere slowly. And it's exactly that type of complacency that emerges that you have to start watching them very closely, because that's almost always the sign of a major breakout.
Well, exactly right. And look what happened as the Cyprus news was breaking. What happened was the price suddenly, gold, for example, suddenly skyrocketed back over 1600, and despite all the predictions that it was going to start breaking down to a lower price range. So, the entire system is built on illusion, and on the illusion of security and stability in those paper fiat dollars and euros and yen and all of that itself. And once that illusion is broken, which can happen literally overnight with an event like what happened in Cyprus, the people obviously flock back to the precious metals. And I think that the other level of manipulation, I mean, there's a lot of levels of manipulation that go on here, but one that's quite blatant is the fact that, for example, the Bank of China vice governor just came out a couple of weeks ago to say, actually, we still have exactly 1,059 tons of gold reserves. It hasn't changed in the last 4 years since we last announced our gold reserves. So you don't have to worry about that, right, markets? Basically saying that the China has too much foreign reserves to possibly put into gold, because if they did so, it would raise the price of gold too much for their domestic consumers who are increasingly getting into the gold market. I think we can understand that this is a total outright lie, a bald-faced lie. China has been importing literally hundreds of tons and is now the world's largest producer of gold. And to think that none of that is finding its way into the reserves would be naive at best. I think China is wholeheartedly stockpiling gold, but they're not going to announce how much they have until such time as it suits them, because obviously it will create a giant jump in gold prices. So I think that's one of those types of events that you can't plan on, that's going to happen at some point. But when it does, it's going to be one of those massive things that hits the markets all at once.
Yeah, and the confidence in the financial system, the world financial system and the U.S. financial system, it's basically eroding. Events like Cyprus, even though they didn't wind up confiscating the deposits of smaller depositors up to 100,000 euros, nonetheless, they said they were going to do it. And that put a chill across the world. And that's got to cause people to start looking for alternatives. Although if you're Apple and you've got $100 billion in cash, where are you going to put it? That's the question. And obviously, it's going to lead to people getting it out of currency over time. It doesn't all happen at once. We know this is a process, and you can't expect these things to happen when you expect them to happen. That things don't work that way.
No, they don't. And it's important to understand what they're trying to do right now. Obviously, they're trying to run up the markets. They're trying to get people out of bonds and into the stock market. We've heard about this ad nauseum in the last several months, the great rotation, and oh, it's going to happen anytime now. Just get into stocks. Look at the markets. They're going up. That's one of the things they're trying to run this money into. And another is the housing bubble that, amazingly enough, they're trying to reinflate. After all of the crisis that they caused in the past few years, they're now trying to talk about this housing recovery that is supposedly happening. But if you, in fact, look at the actual regional home prices, they're not above 2004 levels yet. So they keep talking about this, but it's not really happening. And when you look at mortgage applications, that is significantly down from the pre-bubble era and is not rising. So a lot of this is just hype that they're trying to, I think, reinflate a bubble and trying to get some of this hot money into the housing market. But I think you're right. I mean, the central banksters can continue to manipulate the markets to try to get people into this or that direction. But I hope people are smart enough to know that when the financial talking heads are all talking about the same types of investments and saying how great it is, I hope people are at least cocking a quizzical eye at that and realizing there might be an agenda behind what's being said.
Absolutely. No question. And we've seen it here. They're manipulating the supply. The demand is the demand, although they're manipulating the demand through artificially low interest rates. You combine restricted artificially low supply with artificially low interest rates, and yeah, the demand is going to be higher than it should be. But whether that's demand that would be in the future that's brought in for today, or it's demand that wouldn't exist, it's not the sign of a healthy real estate market.
It isn't. And again, this is another thing that I think there's no true basis to back it up at this point. I mean, certainly we're not going to see the same levels of housing starts that we saw in the lead up to that bubble that caused the great crash, because that was obviously a market where it was all about speculation. It was a speculative bubble. And to try to think that we're going to get some sort of recovery right on the back of the popping of that bubble is absurd in a lot of different ways. And especially as we're moving into the retirement of the boomers era and the shrinking of the working age population. And to expect that there's going to be some kind of big housing boom that's going to be based on something substantial is not just a pipe dream. I mean, it's a dangerous delusion at this point.
Yeah. And when we talk about delusions, one thing is for certain: when you have gold and silver in your hand or your pocket, that is not an illusion.
That, and I mean, I'm not against other commodities and assets. I mean, I'm not against the idea of owning land, because obviously it does have value, even if no matter what's happening in the markets. I think there's a lot of different ways to do it, but precious metals obviously has been a store of value for thousands of years, and I don't see that ending anytime soon. So I think it is absolutely a safest place to store long-term wealth, and I hope people are taking advantage of what is a relatively low price, considering where I think gold and silver should be at this point.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right, and I think we're going to start seeing the move the end of next month. The technical factors will fall away, and I think that the demand for it and the prices will move in a way that they really can't be suppressed. Anyway, James, it's always a pleasure speaking with you. If people want to go listen to your show and they want to go find out more about you, read your writing, where did they go?
The one-stop shop is CorbettReport.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com. You can find all my podcasts, interviews, videos, articles, and you can find out how to sign up for my newsletter or get my DVDs. And all of my thousands and thousands of hours of media are completely freely available for download there.
All right, James. Well, hey, always a pleasure to have you on the Financial Survival Network. We will talk with you again soon, and you be well.
Appreciate it, Kerry. Take care.